Welcome to Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers. Every week, I'll be talking to different business people, artists, sports people, and other personalities about things that they've done in their life and things that they want to do. Join me and dig deep. Welcome to this week's Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Victor Kalea. Now, Victor and I are writing colleagues, for want of a better word, but you've actually published a book recently.
Yep, I did.
You'd always wanted to do?
Well, it's interesting as you call it a bucket list, because I always wished to be a writer. I always wished to write a book, but I never knew I could do it. And I always used to say, how do people do it? How do people write? So I had it in my mind, but I never really wanted it till I was pushed into it. And then, yes, it happened. The book happened as well. Well, I mean, I pushed myself to it, but to writing, I was pushed into it. So basically, it was a bucket list by default or by force majeure. I never thought I had it. So at the young age of 54, I started a new line in my life, and here I am at 61, still doing it, and hopefully still will be doing it till I go off in the box. So.
But did writing your first book actually make you want to do more and more, and you realize, I mean, it's not an easy
it wasn't,
thing to do.
I didn't start writing the book. I started writing other things. I started writing journalism mainly, and articles for magazines, and some people didn't want my articles.
That happens.
Yes, and you are one of them.
That happens.
It was quite a, oh no, because I expected, you know, the first success I had was sort of, I wrote an article, people said it was good, and I said, oh good, I'll stay at home and people start ringing me and chasing me and telling me, write, you have to write, do this. No one did that. So it was quite a shock. And then I realized that in life, even writing needs some marketing.
Yes,
and pushing yourself and saying, hello, I'm here. And I did that, and more articles came, and more commissions came for clients to write for them. And then I started writing this book, and the book developed on its own. It was all a bit about me and flighty things about me. And it happened.
Did you start to write it essentially for your family just to have as a
it was,
fun
in fact.
Reference?
Yes. It was just for the family, and then I realized, no, this could be, I mean, more than I realizing, because I never feel like I can do much in life, and I always feel so, I can't do this. But then people pushed me and told me, yes, it's good, and yeah, and then it happened. And the publishers thought it was a good idea, and it happened.
And it's doing well.
Yeah, I'm very
Absolutely.
Happy with it,
yeah.
Very happy. But as a keepsake, it's a great thing. I believe that everyone should tell his story. I am a great fan of storytelling, and I think everyone has a story and should tell
Absolutely.
It.
Even if it doesn't get published,
keep
it in your own
exactly,
drawer for your own.
I would love to know what my great-grandfather did, for example, you know, and you know the story, and you can build the story of your...
And start to see your traits and
exactly,
your characteristics
yeah.
and...
Oh, no.
See what they are.
Killer!
Really?
I don't know. I have to find this book.
Oh, dear. I know one of my partner's ancestors was the person who put the most people to death.
I see.
Yes.
The executioner.
Judge. Yes.
Not the judge or the
executioner? The judge, I think.
Oh, the judge.
Yes.
Okay, at least.
But still.
Most probably mine would have been the executioner, not the judge.
Now you have to start delving back and looking into this.
Yeah, definitely.
So I did once a series of articles about street names and the people behind the street names, one
Fabulous.
Of the in-flight magazines. But some of the stuff you find out, I thought, no, I don't want to write that because, you know, you're going to be de-invited to dinner parties.
Exactly.
So sometimes writing
sometimes
a story,
it's better to be de-invited.
But then you look and think, oh, did you know? Your great-great-grandfather.
Exactly. Some good names turn into bad names. Yeah.
Have you got any other plans? Any plans for more?
Yeah, I want to do a continuation of this Confessions book. Mm-hmm. Which I have quite a few planned.
Quite a few confessions?
Yeah. At last one after, I always threaten people that my last one will be the one after I'm gone, so that I'll be able to really dish it out. But one of the things that people told me, because it sort of puts me in a bit of, you know, I'm full of defects and
no, aren't
you? And that's what I mean. I think one of the things that I always thought I wished to do and when I started writing was deflate our ego of everything serious, everything's taken, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ takes a pizza and my God, the whole world stops, you know, I mean, it's more important than the problem in Korea, I mean, we're a bit too, I don't know.
No, and I think we, you know, we like the funny stories about people and the humanizing and, you know,
we all want them, I don't know, I think,
I like to think we're all a bit more real, but you're right, we do have this facade all the time that needs to, you know, be a little less polished.
We forget that we're 400,000 little men and women and a little island. But anyway.
Yes. Yeah, so you've got more confessions planned.
Yes, more confessions. And I have a few more ideas. I have a book about Malta.
Mm-hmm. From what angle are you going to?
The funny side.
Okay.
The funny side. So basically it's a project and hopefully soon to be launched and put out there.
Be a good one for the tourists to be able to take back with them and sort of have memories.
And more than the tourists, I mean the tourists as well, but now we live in a very cosmopolitan world here, Malta, and there are quite a lot of people who live here and want to find out what makes us, Maltese. And I mean, they'll know a bit, but I hope to give them a bit more.
There are things when you live here, because when I moved here, I had my goddaughter used to think I was living on holiday.
I thought you were always on holiday,
No, charmed life, that's all. No, but she just thought it all the time. I just went, I did the beaches and the nightclubs and all the fun. And she doesn't realise actually the work is completely different to when she would come on holiday with me. It's completely a different Malta.
Yeah.
And I think that education process is missing for people that come here.
Exactly.
And some people don't last because they're expecting to live on holiday.
Exactly, yes.
So I hope you do some of the funny stuff.
I do, but that is one thing which I have a friend who's Brazilian and she's married to a Maltese man, and they go on holiday to Brazil, and they always used to go when these children, and they live on this big, huge farm, and whatever, the grandparents, and to them it's all, wow, this is a holiday, and so they always want to
live
go
like
there
that.
And live there, but that's not life, as you're saying, it's, but more than that, what I want to show them is, they know the Malta, and I think travellers today, and visitors to the island, or people living here, they want to find out really what. I don't believe people want to come here and just eat continental food and Italian food and drink Italian wine or French wine, but they want to find out what really makes us us, But it's with a funny...
I can imagine.
I try to turn it into a funny thing and make us, again, burst the bubble a bit of the...
Yeah, no, I think it'd be good fun. I'll be looking forward to that.
Thank you.
And what else outside of writing
outside
have you got on your bucket list? Or were there things that you'd done before you started writing that...
I think my biggest bucket list was writing. So when it happened, I said, okay, I'll just do this. In fact, I joked that what was a serious in the beginning, I started out as a sideline and then it became my work. And it's such, I still enjoy it so much that,
You don't see it as work, really?
Not really, I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy interviewing people. I don't enjoy being interviewed, but anyway, that's to suffer things in life. But but it's great being interviewed by you. But anyway, so writing, I don't feel it's, my God, when Adam was chucked out, they say God told him go and toil, and for me it's not toiling. I mean, and especially this is the big difference. Before there was I owned a small publishing firm which we did magazines and directories, and it was not because it was tough work, but it was stressful timing, and you depend on others. Today I depend on myself, and if I wake up and say I have to work, I just work till whatever.
But don't you sometimes get subjects that you have to write about that you think, okay, where do I start with this one?
Yes, obviously, but I mean, I think the worst one was when they told me to write about honey, and I was told to go and visit the beekeepers thing, and I said, oh my God, and I ran away like, oh, gee, these bees are coming for me.
Did he put you in the big nuclear
Not
suit
at
thing?
All, he was. And I was, oh no, it's okay. And bees kept coming, but it was okay. Then
these are one of your funny stories, obviously.
Well, it was an interesting. But again, it's an interesting thing. I have another idea. It's a project, not just me. I want to do a collective thing about people who made the difference in Malta, who are Maltese, and sort of the mentoring side, how they failed, how they made it in life, etc. And that was one of the stories I met during this beekeeper's interview. I met him, and he was with his father. And his father's grandfather or father, I can't remember. The grandfather, I can't remember who it was, but he had started this beekeeping business. It's a small business, but at the time, obviously, it kept them going. And he was completely uneducated, and he had gone out to work when he was 10 or 11, as at the time, and he was a stonemason or something. And then at some point he said, I can't remain like this, and I need to get educated. And he self-taught himself to read, to write. He started writing about bees, researching about bees, wrote poems about bees, and then he actually built a school for the people of the area. These stories are, we don't know them, and they should be told, that this guy... back whenever it was in the 20s or whatever, learned on his own.
He should be a national hero.
Exactly. These are the heroes we should be talking about, more than the heroes we usually sing about.
And the ones we should have streets named after.
Exactly, yes.
Exactly. So have you met other interesting people that have made the writing, not worthwhile, but, you know, because writing your own story is one thing. You can dig deep, you can remember things in your own, well, you know, you can just remember things.
Actually, funnily enough, one of the people who inspired me most to write stories of people is an uncle of my wife. Mm-hmm. He died when he was 96.
Oh, okay.
He lived in England and in other places, but he was in the army, he was a doctor in the army. But he left Mota when he was about 22, and he lived a great life, went around all the world, in the war, in NATO. And he spoke, I think, 11 languages. He was an amazing guy. Yeah. I mean, when he was 90, he was great till he was 94, even after that. But then he started going down and he died in 96. Mm. But till he was 94, if you met him, if I met him, or most of us meet him, he had a social calendar which, you know, beat us all. You know, you tell him, I'm coming to see you in January, and he tell you, no, because January I have this, I have that. I mean, and after he died, I didn't tell his story. I didn't ever record him or anything, and I always felt bad. And that gave me, so the failure in that made me realize that people should tell the story or find out about uncles, brothers,
yeah,
sisters.
Yeah, I was wondering if we can encourage people to talk to their grandparents and their older aunts and uncles, because they do, you know, in the times that they lived in Malta,
exactly,
things would have been so much different.
And the thing is, people, I find, I don't know if you meet this in your writing, but I find that many people tell you, oh, I don't have a story to tell, you know, except for the business people or the entrepreneurs or the singers or the, and most of us think we don't have but most of us have an interesting story or an interesting twist to it.
Yes.
Oh, we remember things, as you're saying. We remember Slim or Leah or whatever back in the day when it was different and schooling was different and things were different, which is interesting. I always like these insights into people, and I think
Things are so.
Exactly.
You know, you sometimes drive through a village and you think, why is that house covered in snail shells? You know, why is that, you know, that tower built there? Why
exactly.
And somebody did that, you know, and why did they do that?
Exactly.
And, like, say, somebody built the school. How did they do
exactly.
that?
Exactly. Sort of. You were talking about street names. I was brought up on a street in Slema called Blanche Street. All our life it was Blanche Street, and all of a sudden, after I left, but all of a sudden became Blanche Uber Street. And she was the first woman doctor, it seems.
Okay.
Now, okay, it was a great insight into a hero, as we were saying, because it was the first woman doctor, I think the first woman doctor. But all of a sudden, this name changed completely, because to me it was just Blanche Street. I don't know why it was called Blanche Street, so I never asked, but it was because it was the name of... So yes, it's true, the stories behind names and whatever is interesting.
I think there's another book there, Victor, you could do. Mm-hmm. I'll help you.
Definitely, let's do it. Collaborative one.
But we should put our names on the spines, like I said, because some of the stuff you uncover.
Yes, unfortunately aren't exactly the least shady.
Collective memory,
things.
I think, which is the beauty of being a writer of your own story, is
it's true. But, you know, on the other hand, that's another thing which I find that in Malta needs to be told. Our bad side and our...
The mischief side
is always kept, no, let's not say that.
But isn't it that the Maltese, don't you all have these nicknames? So there's got to be something somewhere down
exactly,
the line.
Yeah.
These nicknames have come out, and not all of them are, I don't say flattering.
Not at
but,
all.
You know,
exactly.
But there are some that when they're translated, you think, really?
That's what they mean.
People call you that?
Exactly, yeah.
The whole family's that, so sort of heading back to what
exactly,
the nicknames...
Exactly, yeah. Which is a pity, because a lot of these nicknames are, I mean, the idea of nicknames is not so...
Differentiate, I suppose.
But it's not so much used nowadays.
No.
I mean, except for villages and
it's
whatever.
Different tattoos now.
Because not exactly. now we're sort of beyond that.
Mm. Yes, we're foreign if we live in a different town.
Exactly.
Now, so, yes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
But what about the difference between... Because, you know, there are lots of people who write, because now writing is easy. And I mean that in the sense of...
Thanks.
As a professional writer, what I'm saying, everyone thinks that they can write.
Yeah.
And because people blog and because people do a funny post on Facebook, you know, they sort
it's
of...
It's easier.
Yes,
it's easier. It's easier to reach an audience.
Yes. But the difference between that and actually sitting down and realising you have good stories to tell, how do you identify that to be able to encourage people to do the same thing as you? Not necessarily to publish the book, but to actually sit down and look at their life and their ancestors and the things that have happened to them, and actually write them down. How would you get people to think about that?
It's a bit of a difficult question, because I really don't have a strategy or whatever, but one of the things that I find is the first time you speak to people, I'm telling the story of two people right now. One is a natural relator of things, and he'll turn a story which is not interesting into an interesting one. So that's the easiest part of. But then I have another one who's very cagey about what he wants to say and what. But then once you start delving in, I think then you sort of they relax. I think one of the main things is they need to trust, and I don't know, maybe they trust me. I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but they seem to want to let go. And then what I do, which is, I know, very unprofessional. You called yourself a professional writer. I call myself a very amateurish one, because I ask loads of questions, which most people, unlike radio, because you need to edit it, I ask a lot of questions, which at the time they seem completely unrelated and they don't follow any chronological or sequential idea. But then I build the story as people, you know, so basically maybe, you know, I pick and choose on what they said, and maybe things like we talked about houses and streets and street names, even asking what the house is called, which, you know, in Malta we have this thing that to have these strange names of, I don't know, east, west, north, south, and all strange names. And even that could be an interesting thing. Why that name? You know, why, and did you change it or did you keep it? And I think like boats, we tend to keep the name that you inherit.
And, yes, you have to, otherwise it's bad luck. Exactly. But it is when you see people naming their boats, there is always a story behind
exactly.
it. And it's,
exactly.
You know, they want to tell you the story. But when I read your work, it's always like I'm sitting in the room with you with a glass of wine and we're just chatting. You know, I feel like you're just telling me a story.
That's a great compliment, because that's what I like saying. In fact, some people tell me that, you know, that sometimes I hear, oh, that's exactly what I want.
Laughing, or you hear you sort of being mischievous or whatever in there.
Yeah, so that's a great compliment.
But maybe when people start, if they start to say, imagine writing a letter to your daughter or your son or whatever, and if they start to write their story that way.
Exactly. Yeah. It's true. Writing letters is always a good way of breaking the...
Do you still write letters today, or is it all email and
emails?
All emails. Okay. I miss letters.
I haven't written a letter.
I miss letters.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I miss opening the envelope and it not being Bill.
That's true. That's
parking
true.
Is my that's the only true. People that write to me.
At least you have fans. at CBA. It's true. The letter side, and especially the email, is too instant. Mm. So basically, the minute you write it, you can actually sometimes, you know, the other one is reading it. While when you send a letter, there's the measured approach. Mm. And the timing thing, that you receive it and you open it and there's a bit
the anticipation and the storytelling there.
But it's fast. I mean, in the same way, I still sometimes very, very little, I write longhand. Mm. Some ideas, actually, more than anything. And I always used to say that when I write in longhand and then type it, it's more me.
Yes, better. Yeah.
But it's so time-consuming.
But I mind map, so I'll something, and then something, a memory comes out, or an idea comes out, and I end up with this spider's web of words. Uh-huh. And then
you type, it's so much easier. First of all, my handwriting is so terrible.
Legible, yes.
What did he say?
That was
me.
A really great time. What was?
I have notes, which I say, okay, I wrote the note so that I remember not to forget, and then the note is...
I sometimes have to, you know, it's one of those things I put out on Facebook. Why would this be in my diary? I've written myself a code word, and the code word is now...
It's like putting something in a secret place so that you're in the best place to not be found, and you actually never find it.
Yeah, never find it. So are there other things that you're looking to write? Maybe poetry? Is that something?
I do write poetry, but it's not... It's more... garbage more than poetry, but it is feelings. But one day I told someone once, I want to get hold of them and see if there's anything which is worth saving. I love it, but I find it very difficult to understand. Sometimes I find it very difficult to understand. I love the sound of poetry, but sometimes I miss the meaning of poetry. I know this sounds the most philistine of things to say, but sometimes I'm more in love with words. I love the sound of words. In fact, one of my other projects is to, which could be a project with other people, so loads and loads of people, of getting the loveliest words in your brain, two or three, whatever they are, just for the sound, not for the meaning.
Yes.
And getting hold of these words and putting them all in a book with a great graphic designer, designing something about the word and your feeling about the word. Mm-hmm. Mine is Al di là, which in Italian, you know Italian, Al di là is the beyond. So, but it sounds so al di là, you know.
My favourite Italian word is caino. D teaspoon. I just think it's the prettiest word. It just makes me smile automatically.
I don't use it much in conversation. No, but you should.
But, but there we go.
So poetry, to me, I don't know, maybe because I try to understand too much. And when I read, I don't know if most people are like me, but when I read, I need to read every... You know, there are people who say they speed read and all. I can't. I need to read every little word. And maybe that's it with poetry.
It needs to be more...
Exactly, you know, and sometimes I say, okay, it's a lovely thing to hear, but what does it mean?
But, but I find when I don't write much poetry, but poetry to me is much more from the heart, from the soul. It's normally either when I'm really, really black. Super happy or really, you know, in the worst place ever.
Exactly, yeah.
So I think poetry actually is more...
Emotive.
Yes, yeah. And really exposes your soul. So I think that's more difficult.
Yes.
But I listen to a lot of spoken word artists.
Those are brilliant, brilliant.
You know, and that's sort of when you hear them, you think, if you'd read it, you wouldn't have got the same momentum.
No. In fact, my favourite poem, which I hated when I was young, is Do Not Go Gentle Into the Good Night. And then you hear Anthony Hopkins or
sob. Oh, you just got to give me goosebumps.
And the other guy, Richard Burton.
Mm,
and you hear those and you say, it's wonderful. It's words so beautifully said. And I wish to write a book about some short stories, which I would love to write.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of this flash thing, which are these short, very short stories.
And all of these to be read or to be recorded or maybe short films or?
Read, yes. Films, yeah, if anyone is out there in Hollywood, Bollywood or wherever there is.
Well, we have a media unit here at university. We could start there.
I'm available for anything. Actually, I always say that I won't stop myself from trying to what I should do. Mm-hmm. The only thing is, the problem is the time and, you know, how much do you stretch out of time. I'm not a very good time management
guy. But with writing, you wake up and you're in the mood or you're not in the mood?
No.
You wake up and you write, you're always...
Till now, I'm still waiting for this horrible block that is always said that it descends on us. But since I started, most of the time, there was a time when I started, I used to say, no, I need to be inspired, I need to. But now I find that it's a job and I have to do it. I do sometimes change what I'm writing. So I usually have a few projects going, so I can change the thing I'm doing to suit
your mood.
The mood more. But I can actually say I have an article every Sunday that appears on an online portal. And when I had started writing, I needed to plan something like that 2-3 weeks before and know what I'm going to do. And now sometimes I just leave it for the very, very end.
But now as well, we're so fed with information all the time that your article can change. So if you're too ready,
I still am not very confident of what I do, but I used to be, you know, but will I have it ready in time? Will I have the right... material.
But surely the book now has given you the confidence to...
Yes, I'm more confident than I was. But I still question what I write.
I think anyone who exposes, literally, you know, you're telling your life stories at the end of the day, and you might be writing about data warehousing and whatever else. That stuff, people don't know it's you.
What's
behind
that?
It. Yeah, see, that's the kind of stuff I write about. You see how glamorous my life is? So, you know, if you're writing about something that hasn't got your name
I thought beekeeping was bad.
I quite like the idea of the poem about bees. I'd like you to dig those up, actually. I think that could be something we could cover. No, those sort of...
Interesting.
We've got a beekeeper behind us, actually. Uh-huh. And I watch and I just wonder what he's doing all the time. And apparently now he's moved his bees to Maliha to do something else.
Oh,
and they
for
come
summer.
Back. Yes, for the summer.
He goes for the summer, he takes them for the,
yes,
for
they
the,
have
sea,
a holiday.
For the seaside.
Yes. I know. The life of a bee. But
actually, it is very interesting. The life of a bee is amazing. I mean,
you know, really it's fascinating. It's, and you sort of, all you want to do is swap them. But, I shouldn't have said that, should I?
No, definitely not.
Anyway, so there's different poems, and I find that fascinating, that people can pick on a subject that seems mundane, for want of a better word, and really pull out something. Say, there'll be a memory that, like you say, can start from something, but actually you can dig and dig and dig and dig and find. Very well. Anything else on your sort of bucket list, things you'd like to do in your lifetime?
Travel more.
Any particular places and for any particular reasons? Or you want a diary?
I would love to do that, actually. Mm-hmm. Go somewhere and write about a place.
And pick on a subject like street food or...
Exactly.
Food. You know, pick on a something and investigate that.
I did a bit of that. I mean, very, very little, but I was asked to write some things when I was abroad, but very, very little. But I would like to do it on a longer sort of thing. You know, you go somewhere for a month or two and write about what the place means to you.
Mm-hmm.
whatever. But I'll dare there. No one has knocked yet on my door. So I'll wait for someone on my bucket.
They might.
There's a bucket which needs filling. Thank you.
No, I do think if you find a subject, you know, you could probably get somebody interested if you said, I want to talk about, I can't think, you know, navy ships that docked in the harbour and go back and find one person from each country. Exactly. That could probably be something quite interesting, you know.
No, there are so many subjects. I mean, when I had started, I used to say, but what am I going to write about? And then the more you write, it's like everything else in life, you know. When you start reading, you say, but I'm not going to find anything to read. And then you start reading and you're reading and you read. And the same thing happens with, you know, your knowledge about art or your knowledge about warehousing.
Data warehousing, data warehousing, you know, it's really exciting stuff.
Very, very exciting. Uh-huh. We need to write a poem by now.
That would be a challenge. A challenge. Not necessarily something on my bucket list, but yes, a challenge, I would say.
But I think that the more you explore, the more you find, you know. Mm. And my bucket list is so full of books and projects I have. And if I had to finish them all, I think I'll live beyond quite a few hundreds of years. But I don't know.
It's just time that stopped you? Or
I mean, yes, time. And the thing is, I always used to say, when I had started this, I said, I'll never get into anything which is very businessy. I'll just keep my own world, not get others to do. But collaboration, yes, I'm looking at that, and I'm doing it with a project or two. But yes, there are so many projects, and people keep telling me, but people will steal those ideas. Many ideas.
You know,
the more people actually write about these things. When I had started telling people about this, about the families that need to tell the story, mm-hmm. someone actually told me, you shouldn't tell everyone. You should keep it to yourself. Why? There are 400,000 people living in Moors, and okay, not all of them have a story, but some of them, because the babies still need to...
Not everyone can write at the end of the day.
Exactly. No, exactly. And you need to find the stories, as you do, and as you manage. And you manage in a data warehouse, which is...
I remember the very first line of my very first article, which was... Whether you're sipping a Bacardi Breezer on the shores of Ibiza, there you go. And this was a story about Guinness.
Oh, fabulous!
And their data warehouse, and it was basically talking about
a lovely first line.
Information.
I mean, it's a very difficult first line to read.
But it was a lovely story of a Bacardi Breezer then stuck in the sand on a beach, which makes you look at it. You don't realise you're going to be drawn into this very exciting piece about data warehousing Guinness
and
the size of the information that they need.
Very interesting.
To ship their products around the world.
Need to come for lessons to how to write about breezes and breezes in Ibiza.
Sipping a Bacardi Breezer on the beach in Ibiza, But no, there's some really, really fun lines. Have you got any favourite lines from your stories?
Favourite lines? No, my memory is so bad that I will not remember anything. I mean, maybe the thing that I will always feel good about is the title of the book, which is Where's My Brother, which should have been in Maltese, really. I should have written it in Maltese, which is Fainu, and that was my brother's... Well, I used to think it was his name when I was young, because where is he? My mother was always calling out. So maybe that's my favourite. I mean, I hope my second book will have a good title.
I
write in English.
Yeah, the rest of us can.
I write in English, and I always wished to write in Maltese. I mean, I know I can, but I feel better in
Maltese is very expressive, but to have a wider market.
It's not just the market. I read most of my things in English.
Okay.
My education was in English. I mean, I'm Maltese speaking, but my brain was more than on the English side. So I miss Maltese, but I will one day try as well.
That's another thing for the bucket list.
Another thing for the bucket
list. That's been fantastic. I've been speaking to Victor Callea this week on Bucket List with me, Monique Chambers.
Thank you.